Why do we get stuck in the same types of relationship patterns over and over again?
So we get stuck in the same types of relationship patterns over and over again because we're attracted to what is familiar to our nervous system, not what we want, right? So what we want and what we're attracted to actually are two different things. So if you come from a background of any sort of trauma or chaos, your nervous system is wired to feel comfortable in trauma and chaos, and that is what you are going to be attracting in your life. And when you meet somebody who is not bringing trauma and chaos, they're calm, you're probably not going to feel attracted to them. You might think that they're boring, you might think that they're uninteresting. And it's because your nervous system feels unfamiliar, and anything that feels unfamiliar to your nervous system feels unsafe, even though it actually isn't unsafe, right? And what is feeling safe is that same rush of chaos that you're used to, and then you keep going for the same thing over and over again.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's something that I honestly didn't know about until just a year or two ago, because I've looked into that myself and I feel like not nearly enough people know about just that dynamic in relationships. What was the place that you discovered that, or like who was maybe someone who introduced you to that concept originally?
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I definitely discovered along my healing journey in therapy because when I finally I had a history of really bad relationships myself, and I grew up in a home with a mom that was physically and emotionally abusive towards me, right? And so my nervous system was not wired for good things, and I realized that I was the one choosing those terrible, toxic, abusive relationships that I was in, but that's what felt normal to my nervous system, and I discovered that in therapy.
Totally. Yeah, that's a really intense topic. What's something that you feel like more people should know about abuse, especially if it's coming from a familial environment, considering how difficult that can be to talk about?
There's so much shame associated with it. Even as the person who has been abused, and especially when this happens to you in childhood, because children always think everything is their fault. So they think that if they're being abused, that it's because there's something wrong with them, and they will try to hide it. And then when it's a close family member, like especially a parent, you want to cover up for them because the thing is, and I've learned this like even as an adult, right? Society is not going to side with you when you are being critical. I don't have a relationship with my mom now because if I did, the abuse would continue, right? And there are so many people in my life that judge me and criticize me for not having that relationship with my mom now, and they'll say, "Oh, but she's your mom," right? And I'm like, "Yeah, but it doesn't mean that she gets to abuse me." And there's so much shame that's associated with it that and ideas that people have in society, but it's your family. You can't say anything bad about your family. And if you can't speak your truth, it becomes your shame.
Yeah, that's so true. It's really hard for, I think, people at large to digest that. I mean, like you said, family is often seen as this hospitable place where everything should be going great. And even if things aren't going great, it's kind of like, how dare you try to attack the sacred cow, so to speak, right? And it's like, yeah, so there's so many different factors that go into it. You seem like someone who's really like embraced your healing journey and someone who's come out much stronger and better on the other side. What are some of those first few steps that you took, though, to kind of set those boundaries in the early days of realizing the abuse patterns? Like, what were some of those first few things you did?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first step is like, even before you go into the boundaries is just to like listen to yourself, right? Like everybody that's in that situation, you have that little inner voice inside of you that it first starts as a whisper, right? When you're in a situation that isn't good for you and it's whispering like, this isn't the way that it's supposed to be, right? And that is like your higher self that like that is speaking to you. And if you like don't listen to that whisper, it gets louder until it's screaming at you, right? And I think the first step is just to listen to it and take a step back from whatever situation you're in, right? And allow yourself to listen and connect to that part of you. And then boundaries are something that come in time, right? But I think it's like first listening to that voice and going and getting support. And because it's not easy. If boundaries were super easy, especially when it comes to family members, then everyone would be instituting them right away. So I think the first step is just to take a step back, connect with yourself, and have a support system, because you have to have a support system, even if it's people that you're paying to support you, like therapists or coaches. You have to have a safety net there so that because you're going to have resistance anytime you put up boundaries, especially to people that have been abusive towards you. You're going to get the biggest resistance. And then the people that have been compliant in that abuse, right, they also have shame associated with that. It's, you know, if in a family situation, let's just say one person has been abusive, it's not like the other people in that family didn't know about it. Maybe they didn't know about the extent of it, but they knew about it. So they have their own shame associated with that. And that's also the resistance they have to you putting up a boundary and speaking your truth. So you have to have that support system first. It starts by listening to that voice and then going out and seeking that support system.
That's so well said. I feel like that point that you made about other individuals in your life having a similar sense of shame or just grappling with their own emotions that have come out of that experience that everyone kind of had in different ways in relation to the abuse that took place. I think that's an incredible point. I've never heard that before, thought of that before. So I feel like that's a really valuable insight for sure. What are some of the ways that, like, let's say someone doesn't necessarily have the resources to be able to tap into counseling or therapy, what's a tip or two that you might offer to someone in that type of situation?
There are so many online support groups that are free. Go and join one of those. Look in your community for support groups. Like those exist, especially if there's any sort of situation with abuse and violence. There are so many charitable organizations that you can get support that way, right? And then, I mean, for each person, it's also like it's going to be a little different and a little personal as well. So you can also, like, if you're religious and you participate in a religious community, you can seek support there. Like, oftentimes people will be support there. There's options there that are low cost. The other thing that you can do is, like, you know, if you absolutely don't have any of that around you wherever you are, is, I mean, although you're not going to be listening to this podcast if you don't have internet access, right? So you can always find an online support group. But, like, start finding books and videos of people that have experienced the things that you have and start tapping into their energy and connecting with them, even if you can't connect with them in person, right? Because you can go to a library and you can check out a book, but you can be supported by someone else's experience that has gone through something, even if they're not actually physically there to support you.
That's great. Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. There's a lot of underutilized communities, and those are some of the best places to go when someone is really facing a trying situation. So thank you for sharing that. So I know you've been through some of your own, you're both a coach and you've been coached as well. So switching more to, like, the mentee or, like, being coached side of things, what are some of the biggest discoveries you've had or some of the biggest breakthroughs you've experienced?
Yeah, I mean, you know, having a coach, the thing that I loved about it, like, I believe in both therapy and coaching, right? Like, therapy is really that safe space where you're going to open up and someone is just going to, like, hold space for your feelings. And that's part of coaching, but it's not the biggest part of coaching, right? And a therapist isn't going to, like, they have different boundaries in place and they're not going to share their personal experience with you. But sometimes what you need is you need the story of someone else who's gone through something, because that is, like, it helps you connect to hope, right? When you know that. And I think coaching provides that, because coaches are able to share their personal story. And typically why people go to coaches is because they have a profound personal story and people are able to connect to them. And that was my experience, you know, having that with the different coaches that I've had over the course of my life, and then being in group coaching programs as well, right? You hear the experiences of all the people around you, so you don't feel isolated in your experiences. Because what I think is actually the most frustrating thing for all of us, and what makes us feel so lonely, it actually isn't the things that we go through. That isn't the hardest part. It's feeling like we're the only ones that are going through those things, because then we think that there's something inherently wrong with us, as opposed to that experience having been wrong.
I could not agree more. I think that's a huge differentiator between going to a counselor or a therapist and going to a coach. And yeah, I think that's why I've gone through several of these types of like experiences and programs myself too. And yeah, they both have their advantages, 'cause sometimes you do just need someone to kind of guide you in your own thought process towards the answer that you're looking for. But sometimes you need to know, like you said, you need to have a sense of hope and like, can I actually do this too? Or like, what's my life going to look like if I try to do XYZ that you're recommending? And it's like, oh, well, here's how I did it based on all these same things. So I think they're both absolutely valuable. That's a really good point. Switching gears back to abuse and recovery, I know one of the things you mentioned is being able to let go of these past relationships and forgive, and that's often one of the hardest things to do, especially depending on the severity or the duration of abuse. It's often an unthinkable thing at first because you just want this sense of justice, right? But what are some of the first ways that you step towards being able to forgive and let go?
Yeah, so there's two parts to this, right? So one is there's this idea that we have in society that forgiveness means compliance and allowing that person back into your life. And that's not what forgiveness means, right? You can forgiving just means letting go. And how I really see forgiveness is what forgiveness is the acceptance that the past could have been any different than it was. And it doesn't mean that it was okay. It's just that what happened has already happened, and it couldn't have been any different because you can't go back in time. So it's an acceptance of what was, right? And so you can forgive that. And then, if whether you're going to continue a relationship with somebody is actually going to be based on if that behavior has changed, because you can forgive what was, you can't forgive what is, right? You have to let go of that as well. So sometimes that means letting go of a relationship, and sometimes it means like people come to realizations, they change, they go on their own healing, and you're able to start a brand new relationship with that person. But forgiveness doesn't mean that you have to continue on and have a relationship with someone. And then the other piece to this is that a big part of forgiveness is actually not about forgiving the other person. It's about forgiving yourself. Because we feel responsible for all of the things that happen to us, especially as we go into adulthood, right? If anyone has experienced trauma in their childhood, they might be able to like forgive the child version of them. But then when those cycles repeated in their adult life, it's really, really hard to forgive that part of yourself, because you have so much judgment against it. And I think the key is to know that you can't heal by hating yourself. So you have to know that, all of the stuff that you went through in the past led to those cycles continuing, but now you have this awareness. And if you actually really, really want to break that cycle, it's you have to just, again, be in acceptance of the fact that you didn't know any better at the time. You didn't have that awareness, and you do now. And because you do now, you're willing to let go of that and forgive yourself, because whatever happened, it wasn't intentional on your part.
So well said. Yeah, the forgiveness of self is one of the hardest parts. It's often the most overlooked aspect of it, right? I think that's something that with some of the things in my own life, like I've had to grapple with that as well. I think both sides are really difficult because they kind of challenge you in very distinct ways, but I think recognizing like, okay, like yeah, just because something happened doesn't mean that I was responsible for every single way that it played out, right? And totally agree with the part of it's already done. Like what is like, or what's happened is what's happened. The past is the past, and it's not like the present. So it's there's kind of this finality there where it's like, okay, I can just accept it because nothing will ever change what happened there. So that's definitely well said. As far as like setting healthy boundaries, once you've, 'cause now, now that someone's acknowledged, okay, like the abuse happened, I'm on the forgiveness journey. I've forgiven my abuser. I've forgiven myself. What would you say to someone who's learning how to like keep those boundaries in place so that they don't find themselves repeating that cycle again?
Yeah, I mean, so one part of it ties back to what I already said about having that support system, because you really need that. So you need people that you trust that will help you be accountable, that when you're feeling shaky in your boundaries, that those are the reliable people that you're going to help you stay strong in your boundaries. Another part of it is when you haven't had boundaries, it's kind of like the pendulum is on one side, right? Like you have no boundaries. And what we want is something in the middle that's balanced, but that's not what's going to happen. Okay. It's going to be like, you're going to go from this to this, 'cause that's like, it's just going to swing all the way in the opposite side. Right. But it's eventually going to settle in the middle. So don't worry in the beginning if your boundaries are harsh and they come across as harsh and people take them as harsh, because when you're learning how to set them, that's typically what happens. Like very few people are able to just gently slide into the middle. It's going to go all the way, and then it's going to come back, and then it's going to keep shifting. You're going to like have a little less boundaries, a little more boundaries, until you find that equilibrium in the middle. And just know that that's okay, that there's nothing wrong with you, that it's just because it was so extreme. And once it settles in the middle, there's no force that's like, trying to pull it in one direction or the other anymore.
Yeah, that's so true. I think, practice makes perfect, right? And the first time you're doing something, it's gonna feel weird at first. It's probably not gonna land in that, perfect middle that you were talking about. So that's absolutely spot on. I was reading some of your blog posts in preparation for the episode, and I noticed that you wrote one about butterflies at the conservatory. I was wondering if you could expand on that, if that's something that's easy to remember right now.
Yeah. So this is like that the blog post, the essence of that blog post is about n not knowing how beautiful you are, right? And having so in that blog post, I talk about this butterfly that I saw that's so beautiful, is the most beautiful butterfly in the butterfly conservatory. These bright blue wings, and it's absolutely amazing, right? But the underside of its wings are this one color that's it's like brown. It's kind of like the ugliest thing, right? And it's like, and this is done for camouflage, for its protection, right? But depending on like if you saw this, so I didn't even realize at first that these were the same butterflies in the conservatory, because I was like, oh, it's so sad that all of these beautiful butterflies, and then there's these that are like super ugly. They look like moths, right? They're brown and like dull and like and monotone, right? And then I saw it open its wings and start to fly, right? And that is like also our experience as people, right? Like when we start to step into our worth, we like open up and we allow our beauty to be seen, and we're not blending in and trying to camouflage and hide anymore.
I love it. Yeah, thank you for being open to a little bit of improvisation. I know I kind of pulled that one out of thin air, so to speak, but no, that's exactly the impression I got from reading the post and your follow-up thoughts as well. What would you recommend to someone who's maybe feeling discouraged and it's like I don't know what I have to offer in my next relationship, or like I just feel dejected and dejected and rejected, how What are some of those first steps that someone could take to kind of get themselves back into a good place?
Yeah, so I mean, I have these four pillars of confidence that I talk about in my programs, right? So I'm happy to like share a little bit about them, and they're really, really self-based. And my first pillar of confidence is to live your values, because you cannot be confident if you're not living your values. And what happens is sometimes you have values that are in conflict with one another, right? So you could really value success. And so you're like, we're hustling and you're working all the time, but then you could also value freedom and fun, and you don't have any freedom and fun because like you've created this idea of hustle to achieve the success that you want to achieve, right? So it's finding a balance within your values, because like as you live your truth, you will start to feel naturally confident, right? And I love to start with that one, because very few people have resistance to this, because this is not about like a quality that you have or the way that you have to look or anything like that. This is about coming into integrity with who you are as a person, right? So just exploring, knowing what your values are, and then making sure that you are really fully living your values, right? Or if you're going around, like another example is like super angry and disgruntled all the time, and you're not having positive interactions with people, but you value kindness, you are not being kind. So it's really hard for you to value yourself if you're not living your values, right? So you have to know what your values are, what isn't in alignment, and how can you start to step more into your values. The second one is to live your passions, because you cannot love yourself if you do not live a life that you are passionate about. So this means that if you can't tap into this in your career because you're doing something and you need that paycheck, you have to figure out how to integrate your passions into your life. Because if you are going to a job every single day that you hate, then you're coming home and you're watching the same Netflix show, and this is your entire life. Like, how are you going to feel confident? Because you don't love your life. You don't love any aspect of your life, right? So this is where it's like tapping into your passions is key. And this is so personal that it could be anything, right? Like you could be doing like sports, something super adventurous, or I don't know, if you're into video games, you could be joining like some video game community and playing with people. Like it could be really anything, right? But where you're creating aspects of your life that you are super passionate about, that you get to express your creativity, right? And this is going to help so much, because it's going to change the type of conversations you're having with people. Because what oftentimes happens on dates that makes them fall flat is that people are going there and the conversation is like, so what was your week like? Yeah, I was busy.
Yeah.
Like, where is that conversation going? How are you going to spark any interest in somebody, right? Even if somebody has weird, quirky interests, it doesn't really matter, because you're going to find that person that's fascinated by your weird, quirky interests, right? Because you're, and what's going to be attractive is when you talk about those things, you're going to be lit up, right? So whatever thing it is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to, it just has to be your passion, because as you talk about it, as you integrate that into your life, it's going to help you to light up from the inside out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the next pillar of confidence is to practice loving kindness towards yourself, right? And so there's four areas of your life that you need to do this every single day. So you need to do something for your spiritual wellness every single day. You need to do something for your mental wellness every single day. You need to do something for your physical wellness every single day. And you need to do something for your aesthetic wellness every single day. And they don't have to be long or complicated things, right? So you could go for a walk, right? You can you could do a 1 minute meditation, right? You can eat an apple, right? And you need to do these things, because as you practice loving kindness towards yourself, you're also building a belief in yourself that you're worth doing these things for yourself every single day. And I added the one about aesthetic wellness, because you are not going to feel good and confident if you are not taking care of yourself aesthetically. And I don't mean that you have to, try like look different or become different. But what I mean is you have to like take care of yourself. So, and a lot of people experience this during the pandemic, like, you know, where they didn't shower for 3 days and they're in the same stinky clothes, right? You didn't feel good about yourself. You weren't ready to meet people. So like at the very basic, you have to feel clean and fresh every single day. Even if you work from home, like make sure that you're in a state that if like someone was to drop by or you were to meet somebody, It doesn't mean that you have to do that every single day, but when you're in that energy, you're going to start to feel better, right? You're going to hold your head a little higher. You're not going to be hiding and thinking, okay, I need to avoid people today, because that isn't building your confidence. Mm-hmm. And then my last pillar of confidence is self-trust. You cannot love somebody that you don't trust. And where a lot of us struggle with self-trust is we make all of these promises to ourselves that we don't keep. And oftentimes it's because we're making these really lofty promises to ourselves, right? Like maybe you don't work out at all and you wake up at 8 a.m. every single day right now. And you keep telling yourself every day, you're like, tomorrow I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. and I'm going to work out for 2 hours before I go to work. And every single day you hit snooze and you don't do it, right? And you lose that trust in yourself. But it's also because you're trying to make such an extreme change in your life because you're so unhappy. But the thing is, every time you lie to yourself, you become more unhappy and less likely to follow through. So the solution and the workaround is make promises that you can keep to yourself, right? So maybe instead of trying to make that big of a shift, you say, okay, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do 10 push-ups. I'm going to get up, 10 minutes earlier, and I'm going to do 10 push-ups. And that is where I'm going to start. And that now that becomes a promise that you can actually keep to yourself. And every time you do that, you're going to feel better, right? And you can work towards making bigger promises to yourself because you're going to start to believe yourself. And this is also key in exercising boundaries, because if you don't trust yourself, you won't be able to hold on to your boundaries. And it's going to make you a very bitchy and reactive person because right. you're gonna be like, how is someone asking me to do this? Because you won't have the capacity to say no. You need the world to show up in a certain way because you don't trust yourself to be able to handle the situations around you. And then the bonus of doing all of those four pillars of confidence, right, is that a lot of times, like not a lot of times, but actually all the time and energy that you spend on something is what you start to care about. Mm. And I have people do this experiment if they don't believe me, which is like, go to a park and like find like an ant or something like that on the ground and spend like half an hour staring at it and see how much you start to get ant. Like if someone's about to walk by and they're going to step on that ant that you wouldn't even have noticed if you didn't go out of your way to intentionally notice it, you're going to feel sure. some kind of way about it because now you've invested in it. So when you practice these four pillars of confidence and you invest in yourself, you are naturally going to build that affinity towards yourself, right? And when you build all of these things and you feel like something to offer and go out there, then you're going to start to feel so much better in the dating process.
I love it. So many awesome truth nuggets in there. That was a really, really cool overview of just the four pillars that you have in your coaching program and just how you work with clients and stuff like that. So thank you for sharing all that. One thing I particularly loved that you mentioned is integrating what you ultimately value and what you're passionate about into your life. I am reading very slowly because I have a stack of books back here. It's just one of many stacks throughout my place here, but I'm reading very slowly the Way of the Superior Man by David, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but I think it's Dida or Data, something like that. But he talks about how, I mean, the book is written for men, but I think it's true for everybody. He says you have to spend at least 1 hour every single day doing something that you love. He's like, doesn't matter what it is. You could paint, you could sing, you could play golf, you could, make a meal, whatever it is, right? But he's like, if you don't do something that you love every single day for at least 1 hour, then you can't really say that you're pursuing what you love because you're not spending any time on it. So it goes full circle back to what you said, that if you really are passionate about something, you're going to invest your time, money, energy, your heart and soul into it. So I think that's a really, really powerful place to begin. And I think, what you mentioned too, it's not like people have to see your results right away. It's really just a matter of investing yourself there and like seeing that transformation take place as you start to do whatever the thing is that you're passionate about. So that's awesome.
The one thing I'm going to add to that is like, oftentimes what we want is like, we want the 180 result and we want it because we hate ourselves so much and we hate our lives so much that's why we desperately want that 180. But the thing is, when you're in such a bad place, like even when you have like a 5% change, you're already going to be starting to feel so much better, that you're going to have so much relief around all of those bad feelings, the more you incrementally go, like even if it's just 1% at a time, the better it's going to feel, and the less need you're going to have for this like rapid transformation.
Yeah, that's true. People, you're so right on that. People tend to kind of they trick themselves out of the progress that they need to see. It's like, oh, I'm so far away from this goal. Like you said, it's like people are failing because they're setting this ridiculously high, lofty goal, and it's like, well, I'm not seeing any progress. It's like, well, you need to start somewhere. You have to get the first step before you can get the second. You have to write, 10 blog posts before you can write the 100th one, right? Because it's just that incremental step. So totally makes sense. One more question before we wrap up here, but what are like, what are some things that you feel if someone's interested in like relationship coaching or they're like on the sidelines, there's a lot of relationship coaches out there, right? So what would you say is kind of one of your distinguishing offers or characteristics beyond, those four pillars that you just talked about?
I mean, I would say my authenticity, my story, right? And the thing is, like, people know who they're connected to. They know who they feel that authenticity from. And in any time I do a call with somebody, because I say no to people all the time for my programs too, right? And because it's not because I want to work with my soulmate clients also only, because that I can get them the best results, and I'm gonna really, really enjoy that experience. And what I always tell people is, there is more than one path to get to a destination. But if you're trying to follow a bunch of people on different paths at the same time, you're not going to get to the destination. You're just going to walk around in a big circle. So the people that work with me, I feel like they have to just naturally be drawn to me and my story, and really trust me and know that I'm the person that can help them. And I would say that my openness and willingness to share my story, I think, allows people who are meant to come into my world to come into my world. And the other thing I would say that like where I focus my coaching, and there are a lot of coaches that also do this, and there are ones that don't, is my style is not one that is blame focus, because I do see this in the coaching industry. It is about being nurturing and supportive and having a lot of fun along the entire process. Like it doesn't, things will come up, of course, there's going to be tears, but it doesn't need to be this painful, rigorous, horrible thing. It should be fun and enjoyable on every step.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Yeah, I think anyone who's going to see results and lasting transformation is going to see it from a sense of yeah, genuinely feeling like they're capable of it. And I think that begins with authenticity from the coach, but also like that kind of just that gentle process, right? Of like, this isn't about, like you said, this isn't about becoming a completely different person. This is kind of like revealing what was always there in someone. So yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Navi. This has been an awesome conversation. Anyone who's listening, you can check out Navi's work in the links in the show description here once the episode is published, as well as at NaviBlissCoaching.com. Hope to see you guys in the next episode, and take care for now.